Hello, hello, hello. It's Connor here, popping by before the episode starts because I want to tell you about something extra special that Dylan and I do for those drama fans who just can't get enough and need a little bit more. We have something called Drama Plus. This is on our Patreon, which is our bonus content platform, where for $5 a month, you join Drama Plus and you get access to our Instagram close friend stories, and you get a couple bonus episodes of the podcast every single month. And it's also just a way to support us, to keep us going, make us feel loved, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So join the Drama Plus fam at patreon.com/thedramapodcast. And it's just $5 a month, which honestly is like, an iced coffee at your favorite coffee shop, except probably cheaper. It's like a OnlyFans subscription to your favorite OnlyFans creator, except probably a little cheaper. It's like less than you're paying for that extra Apple storage. Okay, maybe that's just me because I have too many photos and videos and files and texts and everything saved in my phone. But anyway, all right. So today's episode is a double drama party with John Cardoza and Sleia Pfeiffer. You're absolutely going to love them. Definitely go back and listen to our first episodes we did with them. This was last March, so March of 2024. And then definitely listen to today's chat because they're currently starring together in Moulin Rouge on Broadway. All right. Love you so much. Love them. $5 a month to become a member of Drama Plus at patreon.com/thedramapodcast. We'll see you soon. Mwah. Time for the show.
Press play.
Curtain of an hour in.
It's time to take spin.
The shade and tea
to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book?
Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell.
Dylan, I'm so excited for today's episode. We dreamed this up right when it was announced that they were going to the show together. So I'm so excited that we're doing it. But otherwise, how are you today?
All is well. I'm finally feeling the spring vibes here in Ohio. I don't know how it is in New York for you.
Okay, well, allegedly tomorrow is supposed to be like 70 and sunny. But then Sunday, rainy and cold again. Wait, Dylan, you don't sound sinus infected anymore. You sounded like ill for like a month.
The power of Augmentin, if you know, you know. It's pulled me through. But wait, Connor, I have to just say, this has felt so casual and fun already with these guests. You know, sometimes you click with the guests. Sometimes it's more of an interview. We're chatty girls with these two.
I know. I can't wait to yap.
And this is also fun because we're kind of, being in year five, we've had returning guests, which is so rare. We have to be selective about who we want back because the magic might not strike twice.
No, I'm so, so, so thrilled to chat with them. You can tell how close they are too. And I think listeners are just going to be thrilled.
I know. I'm going to go ahead and bring them in.
Yes, let's do it.
Our guests today join the exclusive Double Drama Club. And today is extra special because it's a double, double return from two of our most popular guests ever on the pod. Currently co-starring in Moulin Rouge on Broadway, these two are in demand and honestly so iconic. Here's a refresh on the credits, Mama. Our first amazing guest is John Cardoza, who stars as Christian the Composer over at the Al Hirschfeld, a role he previously brought across the country on tour. He's fresh from Breaking Hearts and inciting the need for boxes of tissues after originating Younger Noah in The Notebook on Broadway. His gorgeous pipes can be heard on the cast album, featuring a score by Ingrid Michaelson. You'll remember him from Jagged Little Pill, The Karate Kid, October Sky, Next to Normal, and his solo show, Come Out and Play.
Our second guest is the luminous Sleia Pfeiffer. Before slaying as a sparkling diamond in Moulin Rouge, she created the role of Myrtle Wilson in Gatsby, an American Myth, last summer. You've gagged for her Broadway turns as Penny Lane in Almost Famous, Eurydice in Hadestown, and of course, as Eva Perón in Evita at New York City Center. She's made memorable turns in Hamilton, The Light in the Piazza, Songs for a New World, West Side Story, and Sondheim on Sondheim at the Hollywood Bowl, Gun and Powder Chess, and her own solo show, Here You Are. Together, this duo are bringing backstage romance and incredible chemistry to Moulin Rouge on Broadway. We're gagged to have them here together for a little more drama. Please, welcome to Drama,
John Cardoza and Sleia Pfeiffer.
Oh my God. That was such an incredible introduction. Oh my God.
I remember also feeling like the introduction was overhyping me last time as well.
Listen, that's how we see you. You got to believe the hype, John.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, John, you got to believe the hype. Believe it.
You're a star.
You're a star.
Okay, so Saleha, you're drinking coffee. What do you put in it?
I'm so simple. Like, I just need caffeine. Lately, actually, I've been a cappuccino girl, but right now, it's just some almond milk. It's just some, give me a little bit of creamer and get me my caffeine. I need to get all fancy about it, you know?
Yeah, that's fair. John, you said you're a coffee whore off pod.
It's true.
Connor's outing you.
It's true. I can't lie. Oh, no, out me, please. I'm out and proud. Pride, coffee whore pride.
I love it. Have you already had all of your coffee for today, or were this is like noonish?
Oh,
where
my
you
gosh.
Have more?
I have not. So here's the thing: is that when I'm doing this show in particular, well, I'm really any show, but this one is a very heavy vocal lift. I tend not to drink as much coffee, and so I've been on matcha as like a less acidic alternative to get my caffeine. I'm a big matcha guy right now, but in 2 weeks when I finish up at the Rouge, no one can stop me. It's going to be cold brew all day, every day.
Yes.
And where is your cold brew of choice in, we'll say, like the theater district?
I'm not selective. I'll go anywhere.
You don't discriminate.
We don't discriminate. I will try any coffee shop anywhere. And honestly, I would prefer to try somewhere new that I've never been.
And we should give a little shout out to Bird and Branch.
Right. Yes,
there are. They give us, they give the Rouge people a little discount, which we appreciate. And they've got good stuff.
Great stuff.
I know. Wait, listen, I need to just ask, do y'all remember us, Connor and Dylan McDowell?
Of course. This is such a crazy question to me. Of course I remember you. Not
I
only did we do
him,
your
yeah.
podcast, but I've also seen you multiple times since then.
Of course. You two are iconic. How could
you guys
we?
Are iconic.
Oh my God, thanks, y'all. Dylan always says to me, because now that we don't live in the same city, he'll say to me when we haven't seen each other in a while and we reunite, do you remember me?
Oh, you're unforgettable.
Unforgettable.
In every way.
Oh my gosh. Now you're overhyping me, John.
No, it's not possible. It's not possible.
Oh my gosh. Well, we're so thrilled and honestly honored that you both agreed to do this crazy podcast again.
Thanks for having us.
Got a question for both of you. We asked you this last time. Are you well?
No. Literally, no, not at all. No, we're doing our best. Me and John were honestly, we were like, oh my God, are we gonna be like so like transparent? Listen, like Moulin Rouge is she's a long, hard show. And we love her. So I mean, like the question, like, are you well? Like I would say spiritually, no. Physically, no. Mentally, no. I'm kidding. I actually say spiritually, like, because we have each other. Like, John and I, we got to get out of town on Monday for John's. Yeah. This is John's birthday week, by the way.
Oh my gosh. John. Wait, when is it?
It was on Monday.
Happy belated.
Oh, happy belated.
Thank you so much.
And we rang it in the most beautiful place upstate. And I feel like we're just kind of keeping the greenery in our hearts. Like we got some night, it was just like we were somewhere so quiet and so peaceful for a little while, and it was a reminder for both of us, like, oh my gosh, we got to take some downtime, is really necessary.
Yeah, for sure. Was it just the two of you?
It was.
Wait, that's adorable.
We had a great time.
Oh, I love that. I don't know if I've loved any coworkers enough to go romantic upstate.
We've been talking about it and dreaming it up for a while. So it was overdue and at the perfect time. And yeah, I think, you know, we have a really good time, and the show is treating us very well, and we're having a really good time doing it. But it's a very heavy lift, and it's something that you are saturated quite often, because even when you're not on the clock, you know, you're waking up in the morning, you're like, oh, is it there? And you know, if it's not there, the rest of your day is, how do I get it there? And then and for those who are just listening, I'm talking about my voice or voices, bodies, minds. And then, you know, it's also, not only is it like a really heavy, you know, physical lift, but also your mind is in it from start to finish. And so, you know, really taking the time to remove yourself from that environment when you go home is so important, and not always the easiest thing to do. So we had a really, really wonderful, giggly, funny Monday off. And and I think that kind of rejuvenated us a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so happy to hear it. John, do you have any intentions for this next year of life?
Ooh.
Ooh, that's an excellent question. Protecting my peace. is really my one and only intention. I want to do things that make me feel connected to my purpose, but also that, you know, I'm a major people pleaser. I will sort of like put myself to the side to make sure everyone around me is okay, which is something that I don't necessarily want to let go of, but I don't want to, you know,
No, you
lose
guys.
myself and my own self-care in the process.
John is a very selfless person and tends to put everyone else ahead of him. And that is like, I will know that my work is complete when every time that John is just like, actually, I need to do this, so this is what I'm gonna do. I'm like, yes, babe. Oh my God.
I'm
I
glad you're holding him accountable.
We found ourselves at
really am. We really
the right time.
did.
We found
Somewhat
John at
like,
the
I
right
feel like
time.
we've been able to, I wouldn't say we're like yin and yang. It's not like we're like opposites by any means, but we definitely have been able to like be like where one person is just like, oh shoot, like I really feel like I'm lacking in this, or then the other one of us is just like, no, like you're doing great, you're hot and you're cool and you're talented. Like, you know, on the days when one person needs a cheerleader, I think we've been able to at least be spiraling on opposite schedules, you know, like I've got like Tuesday, Thursday, you've got Wednesday, Friday, and that, like, lucky us, you know.
Oh, that's so
Beautiful.
cute. When
Oh
did
my
you two
gosh.
meet?
The first day of
First day of
rehearsal.
rehearsal.
Really? You hadn't crossed paths before? Oh my
Yeah, which
gosh.
is nuts.
It's crazy. And it only becomes increasingly weird because we have so many people. We have been 1 degree of separation
For
for about,
years.
like, maybe like, is it possible, like 10, 12
Yeah,
years now?
definitely
Since
since college.
college.
I
Yeah.
mean, I was aware of Saleya in college. We have so many mutual friends, and I knew of, like, entering the city, like, I obviously we all watched the emergence of Saleya Pfeiffer.
Oh,
But
yes. You better
we have
stop.
so
That's
many
so crazy to me.
mutuals, and we've been orbiting each other for a very long time. So it's kind of crazy to me that we have not met
Wait,
until now.
actually, the first time we met was at Pure Yoga when
You're
our
right. Yeah.
two of my best friends from college, Ross Yoder, shout out. He's the editor over at Tasty for BuzzFeed. Like,
Yep.
get at Ross Cooks Things, get into it. We stan. Great recipes. But he and my other friend Luke Steinhauer, an Estill voice teacher that everyone should get into. I should plug the besties while I'm here.
Yes.
They were both working at Pure Yoga, and they would get me in for free all the time. I would go and I'd go to the yoga nidra class and I would just go to sleep. I would
Who was
get
at the
ready.
front desk to check her
And who
into
was at
those
the front?
classes but me?
Mr. Cardoza.
I was also working the front desk at Pure Yoga.
So we actually go, yeah, we had
We
that.
go
That
way
was the
back.
first time that we met.
Yeah.
Wow,
Oh,
the
that's so
MT
cute.
to survival job at a fitness studio pipeline is so
Oh,
real.
you wouldn't believe. That was only one of my four jobs at the time.
Oh, wait, I used to work front desk at SoulCycle. So I would see so many people. Sutton Foster was always coming through. She
Oh,
shook me to my core when I was like handing her spin shoes.
sure.
Like that was wild,
Okay.
wild, wild. And actually, I met Ross at that time because Ross would come and take SoulCycle
He
classes, and
did
we
do
lived right by
so.
each other.
You know Ross?
Yes, and
Oh my God.
we knew Josh as well. We were
Oh.
like neighbors. We were just telling John where we used to live up in Harlem, and they lived by us.
Oh my God. Yes. Wait a second. In that apartment. Yeah. I love them so much. And they're the most
Also,
beautiful
someone needs to
wedding.
give Mr. Yoder his flowers. That voice is
Crazy.
bananas. Gorgeous.
Yes.
Stunning.
Stunning.
Yeah, true. Both of them, both the Yoder Tolls,
Yeah.
they are golden-throated princes,
Yes.
and yeah, I miss hearing them sing.
When I worked at 54 Below forever, Josh sang this like at this Broadway Loves Demi Lovato concert, and he has an incredible cover of Demi Lovato's Nightingale. If you know, you know.
Yeah,
Okay,
yes.
word.
They were the ones who put me onto that album. I was like, I don't really listen to, yeah, Ross loved Heart Attack and they loved Nightingale. And I was like, you
That's
better
good.
sing this song at 54 Below, Josh.
Wait, what are y'all listening to right now, music-wise?
Ooh, good question. Whenever I have questions like this, as if it's not like the easiest thing, I have to check. My mind just, there's nothing but
Actually,
tumbleweeds and
I was
like
gonna
Come
say,
What
I don't
May
really
playing on a
know.
loop.
Literally, wait, have y'all dipped into Ariana Grande's, is it Brighter yes. Days or Better Days?
Brighter Days. I feel like there's a type of girl or a person who is, if you have the crossover of like, if you love like the Miyazaki Studio Ghibli movies and Eternal Sunshine, me and Miss Grande, like Eternal Sunshine and like a lot of like the pop culture things that she loves, I feel like I get it. Eternal Sunshine is my favorite movie. It's like my number one. So the whole concept of this has really, I've been loving it. I like it a lot. I need to listen to it on not my fake speakers that I literally got at the bodega on 48. And they have everything. It's my favorite Midtown bodega. They have everything you need.
Good to know.
I bought these like 3 times, you know?
Okay, amazing. Yes. Yeah. And I bet it's way more affordable than getting it at Apple.
It is.
Damn, you and Apple.
I know. I gotta go back to Apple. We were talking before you hopped on about how one of my friends convinced me to get an HP instead of a Mac when I needed to get a new laptop, and I am not doing that again.
No, we've talked about this. Yeah, I need like to a go Dell back to or something. Like, what even is that?
She's an HP. Okay.
Okay, work. All right. I was raised on HP. Dell?
Throwing Dell under the bus. Okay, wait. So one of my like pillars of music, I love Bon Iver so much, and they just released 3 singles off of their upcoming album that I'm very excited about. So that's been in my rotation. I've also been really vibing with Ryan Beatty a lot lately.
Yes.
Love me some Ryan Beatty. And honestly, what I'm seeing a lot of in my rotation is just any sort of like lyricless jazz kind of like instrumental music. That is my like go home, turn my brain off, have it playing in the background, play with the dog, like come down music.
Aw, that's so nice. Wait, how's your doggy?
So a lot of that. He's great. He's asleep on the floor right now. He's already had a very busy day. We've been to the park. He has a new best friend. His name is Boogie. And Boogie is as in like dancing, because when he gets excited, he dances. So they named him Boogie. And I think that's the cutest name ever. So yeah, he's already had a very busy day. But
what is your dog's name?
His name is Banjo.
That's right.
That's right.
Oh my God.
That's right. So it's all coming back.
Boogie, but if Banjo? You ask Zalea, his name is Diego.
I could not remember Banjo's name, man. I was like, that dog's name is Diego. In my mind, it still is. Like, I have to actively think about calling him Banjo.
Banjo came with us on Monday up into the mountains, and he was basically Diego for the day.
Yeah, I'm like, that to me is Diego. And I bet he'll respond to it eventually if I stick with it.
Does Banjo come to the Al Hirschfeld?
He does not. I wish he could. I wish he could.
Is he not allowed to? Or you just don't want to bring him?
I don't think so. Well, my concern is that he's part husky and he sheds everywhere. Like crazy. And I would feel so guilty if the cleaning crew had to take care of his shedding hair.
Wait, I'm thinking about this. Each of you, this is your third Broadway show for each of you, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Of the 3 Broadway shows, Broadway theaters, because I always love to know, I love Broadway theaters and history and all that. Which has been your favorite theater to perform in?
Ooh.
And your dressing room can influence this decision.
I mean, this is far and away the most massive dressing room I've ever had. And probably, I don't know if there's like another theater with dressing room. Our dressing rooms are like the size of like a studio apartment. Like they're,
wow.
We have full, I've never full seen couches, it anywhere else. Showers. It's really like, I mean, how like feet wise, like how big do you think they are?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like mine is like the size of my living room.
Yeah,
which
no,
is
it probably
wild.
Is.
Yeah, I feel like mine is like the size of my living room. And you know, she's cozy, but she is spacious. She has a pull-out couch in there. I've done nothing to the dressing room. It is as it was when I arrived, because they were like, "Do you want to do anything to it?" I was like, "No, this is amazing."
It's really
Aaron,
nice.
Yeah. Mr. Tveit, he set that up for success. It is a really like, as far as dressing room goes, it'll be a tough one to beat. But I will say, I think I really loved performing at the Broadhurst so much. I think that theater is like the perfect size. It's the perfect location. There's something about, and maybe it was like the people that I was spending time with at the time. Like I was up in the ensemble dressing rooms for the top 2 floors, which, you know, you're climbing up a million and one stairs in a very dance heavy show. That was a whole thing. But I loved the like communal vibes up there. I love, you know, the one thing about the Hirschfeld is that it can be very isolating. Saleha and I are on one side of the
Yeah.
stage, and the rest of the company's on the other side of the stage. And we don't really get to interact with them a lot during the show either, because our tracks are kind of like ships passing. So I try to make an effort whenever I can to go up and visit the dressing rooms and just kind of get a little bit of that communal vibe back. But yeah, I really love the Broadhurst so much. I think the Broadhurst might have it also, that was my debut. Like it might just have like a special place in my heart. I don't know.
Yeah, for
Because
sure.
isn't the Broadhurst a mirror, like a backwards reflection of the Schoenfeld? Because they butt up
Oh.
against behind each other and they're the same theater,
They're
but mirror images of each other.
Oh, whoa.
The if that is the case, they felt very, very, very different. And
Okay.
the dressing room setup at the Schoenfeld is quite different. Very, very small. Very, very tight quarters back there. But we were in a small cast show. It was kind of the perfect building for us. I loved the Schoenfeld as well. And one thing that you don't necessarily know before you start working on Broadway is that each of these theaters has like their own set of house workers, crew members who work at that theater no matter what show is coming
Always,
in.
yeah.
And I love like meeting the different crew members from the different theaters. They all know each other and they're so much fun. They all have like such a different, I don't know how you feel about it, Soleil, but I feel like each crew that I've worked with has such a specific like personality to it
Yeah.
and such a specific vibe. So I love, I had a great time at the Schoenfeld, had a great time at the Broadhurst, and now I'm having a blast at the Hirschfeld.
Yeah,
Yeah, really good people.
it's interesting how like every show really has a different culture. I feel like with this show has really taught me just how much the literal architecture of a building can completely shift or like decide what the culture of the building is going to be. Like at the Hirschfeld, it's a very isolating thing. This has really like reminded me like one of the greatest things about doing a show in general is like the backstage life that you have. And there kind of isn't one at Moulin Rouge. Like it's like, you know, if especially if I'm not on stage, I am furiously changing my clothes off stage. And so it's pretty much like as soon as you are up in that swing, like your show is happening and you will have somebody's hands on your body at all times for the next like 3 hours. And so yeah, it's, like I feel like the Kerr, like the wall, the Kerr is so that's such a communal, like, and it's kind of a smaller crew because the show is, there's one set chain, the set just like expands by 2 feet.
Right.
But, you know, like, it's a pretty, so that building is really, really close. And the Eurydice dressing room is actually the farthest away from everything. It's the farthest dressing room from everything of anyone. Like, you have to go up the most stairs and go the farthest away. And I'm like, I don't know how this happened, but whatever, you know. Sure. But yeah.
Wait, oh my gosh. On the topic of you always changing costumes, someone's touching you at all times when you're in Moulin
Yeah.
Rouge. That made me think of when I went to see you guys in the show a few weeks ago, which, oh my God, amazing. The two of you have incredible chemistry and your voices together, moi. I mean, we'll talk about it, but you change so many times, Saleha.
Yeah.
Like, how many costumes are you in throughout the course of this show? And which one's your favorite?
I mean, how many is it? I think it, my rough estimate is like 13. Is it more than that? I'm trying to think,
That
like,
sounds right.
if we're actually like thinking, like, okay, there's the diamonds and the reveal that comes off, and then Shut Up and Raise, that's another one, and then Firework, that's another one, and then ELM. So that's five in the first act. Am I forgetting anything? No.
That sounds right to me. I'm like, I notice it so much more in the second act. I feel like every time I
There's
see
more,
you, it's something
yeah.
else.
Yes. Yes.
It's like
Literally
the
every
second
single scene
act is a
changed.
wild ride.
There's the dingy dress that the Duke doesn't like, and then the come what may, that comes off, so we can do the come what may. And then after come what may, we have Boulevard, there's on stage into the purple dress, and then after rehearsal scene, they take that off on stage, that comes off, and then Green Fairy, and then Roxanne, and then finale.
Oh
So
my God, that's
yeah.
crazy. And Christian
13,
changes like
13.
once, right? And is the
Yeah.
finale the same as the curtain call? Because isn't there like a different curtain
Oh, no, okay,
call?
you're right. That's one more. And then there's the curtain, and you're like, I'm done. And you're like, oh my God, okay. This is bad, God. Yeah, no, I spent a lot of time taking my panties and tights off as fast as I can.
Same.
Period.
John, how many costumes does Christian have?
Well, Christian really had, it's kind of strange because he has multiple costume pieces that are taken on and off and put on in different configurations that kind of make it look like he's wearing a bunch of different things. But really, it's like two shirts, two vests, two pairs of pants, a couple different jackets, like a thing. But like, you'll just be wearing like this vest with this pair of pants during act one, and you're going to switch out this pair of pants with this vest for act two. And then you're going to put this shirt on underneath this vest and this pair of pants. And you're going to, so it always, it looks like he's like changing clothes, but really it's just like only one or two things is coming off at one time. And then you're just running right back out. Cause
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That feels dramaturgically right. This man has two vests and two shirts.
That's basically what I have in my closet
that's
right now.
That's what
yeah. I wear like four or five things and I just mix and match them and that's it.
Okay.
You know, that's my vibe. I like to travel light. I famously did my 6 months on tour with a suitcase and I never saw my trunk.
Oh my God.
So I'm like, this is what
I'm
I
like
do.
A carry-on personal item checked bag for a one weekend trip anywhere.
So. Yeah.
Same.
Oh
same.
No. I was like, I'm going to do this with this one suitcase that I have and I'm going to be fine. But I was only out there for 6 months, so it wasn't like the craziest thing.
That's inspiring.
Yeah.
Wait, that feels like a short tour. Like,
yeah, I mean, 6 months on tour is like relatively quick. Most people sign on for a year. I at the time we weren't really sure what was happening with the Notebook and we didn't want to overcommit. And Moulin Rouge was just really, really kind about working with us. And, you know, we were like, we'll start with 6 months. And if we're able to stay, we'll stay. And if not, then we had a great 6 months.
Did you ever think they'd come a calling again?
I hoped. I hoped. But I wasn't sure, though. You know, you never know if that's going to happen. And especially with, you know, the Broadway company, it's been running for 5 years. And, you know, usually around that time, they're bringing in some names. And so you never know if you're going to be the person to get that call. So I was really, really, I was really lucky, really excited. Yeah, I don't know. And every time that I do the show, like if you have a different scene partner, it's a completely different production, really, because Satine and Christian are so much of each other's shows. So like I started some character exploration on the road, but you know, coming back to it with a year of life under my belt, another year of life under my belt, and with a totally new scene partner with whom I'm sort of like rediscovering this entire dialogue was like, yeah. That's what it's exactly what I hoped would happen.
Aw. And now, okay, when did you decide that Christian was going to have Scruff?
I didn't really decide. It was kind of the production decided. I, without Scruff, I'm a very youthful looking guy. And we needed to age me up a little bit because on stage I read very young. I mean, I went from playing Christian on tour to playing a 17-year-old on Broadway. So it was sort of like, you know,
I thought John was like 22. I thought you were like so much younger. I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to like do this show with this young man.
And I was like, actually, I've got a couple months on it.
Yeah, okay, yeah. You're so much wiser than me. Yeah.
As of Monday.
Okay, as of Monday.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as of Monday, I'm a whole couple days wiser.
You are. I'd say so.
Well, so John, the last time we talked, it was days before the Notebook opened.
Whoa.
And so looking back now, I mean, I know it was a recent experience in a way, but looking back on last spring, last summer, what do you think about your Notebook experience today?
Oh my gosh, there are so many things. You really like when you open a show and you enter that sort of like run, you like live a whole lifetime. You know, it's like it's only a couple months or a year or however long you're there, but it really like it's a whole chapter of life that feels like so separate from everything else. I'm so proud of it, you know? I'm so proud of everything that I did. That was like the dream was originating a role that I loved so much. And I got to do that. And I got to introduce the show to the world. And so many people have fallen in love with it. And that is really like cool and humbling. And I love like, I don't know, every now and then I'll get tagged in like people like covering the songs. And like, that is so special and an experience that I'm like really, really grateful to have. And oh my gosh. And like any time spent with Jordan Tyson was so just like gratifying, educational. She is like she'll be in my life forever. I love her so much and I miss working with her. And yeah, I just think I'm back on all of it with just a lot of pride. There's so much that I wish I could have done differently in terms of when you're opening a show on Broadway, you know, not, I feel like this is something that not a lot of people discuss openly, which is like the energy of like doing a show out of town and what happens when you're like really focused on creating the piece versus what happens when you're remounting the show on Broadway and all of a sudden like the stakes just increase because there's so much more money involved and there's so much more you know, attention on the show and there can be a lot of noise around it that kind of distracts you from the creative work that you're doing, and you kind of have to very actively work to silence everything and just focus on the most important thing, which is doing your job, which I found, which or I find generally to be a little bit easier to do out of town because that is the time where you're really, really like creatively in the mud, just like trying to give these characters life. And it was a real learning experience. And I think if I was going to do it again, I would be just sort of a little more prepared to just kind of like keep my head down, focus on the art, what I'm there to do, and let everything else just kind of be a separate process, you know? But that's really tough. It's really hard to do. There's a
Yeah.
lot of noise.
It is, it's especially hard when you open in the spring and everyone's just comparing it to every other new musical or an awards conversation and things like that.
Yeah, I mean that's generally like when I say the noise like that, you could not be more on the money in terms of like what I'm referring to, which is just it's hard not to like both the good and the bad, like hearing all of the input and like it can be really challenging not to internalize that, to just go and do your thing. And but I came into that production at like mounting it in New York so proud, and I left so proud, and that is like that's everything. Like I can't wait to see what kind of a life this show has on tour and regionally and in community theaters and like everywhere. I can't wait to see it take on so many different lives. And we just so happened to be in a really wildly busy season, which was also just chaotic and crazy, but I'm glad that I did it with the people that I did it with. It was a really good company and with material that I stand by is really, really strong and beautiful. And you know, so many people will be like, will come up to me at the Moulin Rouge stage door and talk to me about how they listened to the album and the kind of like joy and peace that it's brought them. And that's really as much as you can ask for as an artist, you know, to be a part of something that's doing that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you should be proud of yourself. When we spoke last year, I had yet to see it. I know Connor got to see it in previews, and I mean, I absolutely fell in love with the show. And I think we had Joy Woods on back in like August, and I told her, not since Waitress was there a cast album that came out for a new Broadway show that I would genuinely listen to all the time and like feel all the emotions. And you are a huge part of that, John. I mean, your
Thank you
voice
so
is just
much.
so gorgeous, and you're such a storyteller with
Thank
everything you
you.
do. I was even given it a little spin yesterday and I was getting emo
Oh,
about the whole thing. So it's really
yeah. For a
amazing. But
spin.
yeah. And Ingrid
Hell
should
yeah.
have gotten the Tony nomination, but we can talk about that another time. Yeah.
Well, and speaking of, you know, some shows that have happened since we last spoke, Saleha, when we talked to you last year, you told us you were going to be in Gatsby, an American Myth, and we actually cut that from the episode because it hadn't been announced yet. You were like, okay, guys, I gotta tell you.
Oh my gosh, it's all
It's
coming
happening.
back to me now. I'm remembering when we spoke. Yes.
She's
I
warm.
was
She's
she's
warm.
trying to be. She better. She needs she should be eventually. But yeah, no, Gatsby was about to ha it's kind of crazy now that I think about how much life has happened since we last spoke, that whole experience like
Yeah.
happened, and now we're kind of I mean, I feel like when it comes to new shows, like the thing that you realize as soon as you do one show or more than one, it's just like most shows don't run. Most shows don't have an easy time. You are very much in the minority if you are in a show that lasts like a year. And I feel like that's what I learned with Almost Famous was just like don't when it comes to new shows now, whenever I'm working on something new, and I'm so happy that I brought this with me into the experience of Gatsby, was just like with any job, but especially when it's something brand new and something you're developing, be it for a week or a month-long lab or taking it out of town or bringing it to Broadway, like I expect nothing of anyone, and I don't mean that in a cynical way. I just mean in a it's the only way to stay focused on what matters, I think, because if you only get disappointed by how it all goes because you've built up in your head like, this is how this show is going to change my life, this is how da, da, da. And that really, you know, it's just such a gamble. Everything about Broadway, you know, like producers, like I was talking to a financial planner the other day, this business manager guy.
Hey, you're grown. Just like, you're so grown.
You know what I mean? Listen, trying to be anyway. And you know, he's like, the best way to lose money is to invest in a Broadway show. And it's just like, it's always a gamble. And it's more often, way more often than not, it's not gonna go how you think it is. And so Gatsby was just one of these, I think it is the best score and best script that I have ever gotten to work on. It is my favorite role I have ever played. I felt so firmly that I was standing directly in my purpose, in my power while I was doing that show. And I had a distinct feeling, you know, from my past experiences, like if this is the last time that you get to do this, like you better not regret any and how you approach it. So like I threw myself with all my might at Miss Myrtle Wilson. Like I really, like I was like, I will be singing for the blood of Christ, all right, every night. And I will be and I will be like, yeah, I was just like, don't leave any stones unturned, really figure this out. And like John said, when you're out of town, like we all, everyone involved in that cast, that company, like we were so obsessed with the show. And when you're working, like, and that principal company, especially, like, Ben Ross, who became one of my best friends in the world, and Isaac, who I feel like is, like, my brother, and Corey, and Ellery, and Charlotte, and Matt, Amira, and just all these people who, like, we talked endlessly about it, you know, even after the show was frozen, it was just kind of like, you know, we will, like, we were just obsessed, because we were like, this really feels like that thing, you know, like that kind of like, you might not get another thing like this. You know, it felt like something that like wasn't going to be like, oh, a new good show that's going to run for a little while and people like this. Felt like, oh, this is going to be like one of those. And I still stand by that, you know, but then things happen and people change their minds. And that's the business we're in, is like, you have to be so ready for it to not go how you think it will. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what happened. So it is what it is, and fingers crossed that it has a future beyond this. But so many people saw it, and the ripple effect that even just doing that show has had on my life has been, you know, so I'm like, good work anywhere is meaningful, and, you know, being able to do something in this art form that you've dedicated your life to, that you love and that you think matters, and, you know, is talking about the world in a way that resonates well with you, like... The past year, y'all, has been very clarifying for me in terms of how I want to live my life and what I want to prioritize. And you know, like I've kind of had the full gamut of like Broadway experiences in the past, you know, going from like Hadestown to Gatsby to Moulin Rouge, of like, you know, kind of two juggernauts, one of which is like very, very commercial, very tourist friendly, very recognizable. And then Hadestown, this other thing that is just like, kind of the opposite, but this like, you know, kind of miraculous indie folk thing that really just struck a chord with everyone. And I think like, you know, when this is done, I think the next time that I'm on, you know, replacing is just hard, man.
Oh, sure.
It's just, when we talk about this a lot, it's like, it's a big slice of humble pie, you know, like to go from, you know, before even Hadestown, like I was just so used to like when you create something and it fits you like a glove and it plays to your strengths. And then, you know, you come and you replace and like you're trying on someone else's glove and you're like trying so hard to make it fit. And you're like, ah, and you're like, wow, you're trying to figure out how to make it fit. And it's whether it is or isn't, like you're doing it in front of like thousands of people who love it and are filming you every night. And it's just like, okay, like you have to kind of learn to be very zen about it, because you're like, okay, like I will be in process with this for a while, maybe even the whole time. So yeah, it's been a lot of It's been a lot of perform. We've been performing a lot, John.
Yes.
We have been really
Yeah.
saying yes to the dress, honey. But
I appreciate your candidness, Slay. I think that's like really important to hear, and it's really cool that you were able to have those three separate experiences now and then put it into action.
yeah, and each one is just like gonna rock you in some different way than you think.
Yeah, I think you touched on something really cool though, which is that like I mean when you look at these sort of like out of town shows, because you were saying like you have to be ready for it to not go anywhere, and that you weren't saying that cynically, but like it's essentially this, the out of town is the show's audition for Broadway, and like you don't go to every audition expecting to book the show. You go to the audition and then you leave and you forget about it, because if you carry every single audition you have, you're just going to be setting yourself up for a resentment towards the experience of auditioning. And so if you expect every out of town that you do to go, or every workshop or every reading to go straight to Broadway, you're setting yourself up for a resentment towards the process of bringing a show to Broadway. And so it really is the healthiest attitude to go in, say, I'm going to do this show out of town, wherever it is that I'm doing it. Like Saleha said, great work anywhere is valuable. And the work that we do on Broadway is the same work that we do in Boston and San Diego and Chicago. And I think that's just it. It's like when I talk about the things that I wish I could have done differently when the show transferred, is carrying a little bit more of that energy of just like respect for the process, respect for the work, and knowing that this is all part of this thing that you kind of just have to like let go of as it happens, and just stay in.
But you like have to learn it. Like you cannot have that perspective. There's no way. And there are some people who like won't have that experience. You know, there are some people who like they I mean, look at like Malia Joy Moon. Her Broadway debut was her Tony win. And so it's like work. Sometimes it's just kind of like just learning how to somehow like I think what I've carried with any heartbreak that comes is that just like I remember like after Almost Famous, I was down so bad and I was like, oh my God, like I can't believe this happened. But then thinking in my mind, like, okay, yes, this happened, but like now you know so much more about how the world works. You know so much more about how you want to carry yourself and like I look back and I'm like, that was one of some of the most, you know, informative moments of my life where like your character really does not get built in the good times, in my opinion. Like it does a bit and you get very validated, but like in my experience in this business so far, I have been utterly, you know, especially because it's just like when it's showbiz, like the worst thing that happens is your feelings are hurt, but like you're okay, like you are fine, and the world keeps turning and something else comes up and then it's old news like before you can even like blink. The hardest stuff was the stuff that has really taught me like who I am. And I think, you know, like I'm sure I know John can relate to this. Like you have to just know when you're creating something new and a part of a new process, like as an actor, like you really don't have a say in any of the major decisions. And you can feel like you know, the cast and we can all feel like if they would only do this or da 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 da. And you can be right. And it doesn't matter how right you are. It's not your decision to make. And so I think like at this point in my life, and I know John and I have talked about this a lot, where it's just kind of like moving forward in my life, I just know that one of my biggest goals is to be on the other side of things, like have a seat at the table behind it, you know, at some point. Like that's where my sights are more headed, because I'm just like, all right, I've spent like a decade of my life helping other people realize their visions and kind of being like, all right, you tell me where to be and when, and I'll do it. But then your fate is just in somebody else's hands every time, and it's really that can be you're just like, okay, like all you can do is just like keep your fingers crossed. And so John and I have talked about this a lot, and that it's just like, okay, cool, really put your money where your mouth is and start to like plant the seeds of your own work moving forward, because at this point, you know, like we've had like a front row seat to so many processes, and you see how it goes when people do it right, and you see how it goes when people don't. And I'm like, all right, I think I have a good sense of how to at least get started, you
To
know?
at least get started. That is, yeah. To at least get started, Yeah, I think Saleha and I think the reason that we, or one of the many reasons that we clicked so fast, so quickly, so sort of like just beautifully, is that we're kind of at a similar point in our like careers and lives where we're starting to like shift our sort of perspective towards this business that we've been learning so much about over the last 10 years. And so I feel like we've enjoyed being sounding boards for each other in terms of like the plans that we want to make and the things that we want to pursue. And we have very similar philosophies towards art, which has been really,
thank
really fun.
thank goodness.
I love it. No, it's really interesting to hear you talk about that. I was just listening to an interview with Ellen Pompeo from Grey's Anatomy, who of course has been the face of the show for
this is the second time that Ellen Pompeo is coming up in 24 hours.
Okay, we had a lot to talk about Ellen Pompeo last night.
You did. Maybe you know what I'm going to say, but she talks a lot about that, about being the face of this hit TV show for years and years and years, but not being paid what her male co-star was paid and not having the creative input, decisions, seat at the table, like you mentioned that she did. So she really had to fight for over the course of 10, 15, now 20 years to get this salary that she feels reflects the work and the worth that she has given to this huge success, et cetera. And that reminded me of what she was saying. Like, I know from my side of things how this should and could work. So if you give me the opportunity to share it, this is valuable. And I, you know, can bring even more to this. So y'all are the next Ellen Pompeos.
Well, yeah, you kind of just like, you there's a certain, like, I feel like we internalize a lot of, you know, like you got to be grateful for what you can get and you did it, like all these things that are a lot of kind of modes of thinking that are really designed to make us feel small. And I'm kind of like, I'm a big believer in like, you have to teach people how to treat you and you have to show people that you are who you think you are, you know, like they're like, you got to walk through the world as the person that you want to be seen as. And that means like making decisions, like putting yourself in positions that you might feel like are too big for your britches. That's what, you know what I mean? Like John and I were talking about that, you know, just like walking the walk of like, you want to be seen as a star, walk as a star. You want to be seen as a producer, start producing. You want to be seen as someone who creates their own work, create your own work. And like, you know, cause a lot of us talk about it, but then it's just like, all right, get to it, you know, like no one is going to like, it's really just like audacity and money that separates, you know, people who are making their own stuff. And then, you know, you've been working for a while. You're like, okay, now I have a little bit of money. Now I have a little bit of time if I give it to myself. And
well, and also, I mean, what I'm learning now as I sort of start to dip my toes in the water that is sort of like making your own work, bringing it back to that point that Saleh made earlier about great work, you know, anywhere is valuable work, like so much of that. And, you know, talking about like being grateful for the jobs that you have when you have them, which there is a massive element of truth to that in terms of like when you're starting out, these can be really tough jobs to get. Be proud of yourself, be grateful, and apply yourself when you are finally in those rooms. Because when you're in those rooms, that's where you plant the seeds. You start to grow roots in terms of you're working with all of these creatives who, many of whom you've probably been looking up to for a really long time, and you get to see their process, experience it, and you get to build a relationship with them. And now as I'm starting to, you know, it's like Saleh was saying, it takes a lot of money. It takes a lot of sort of like power to get these things moving. And the greatest asset that I have right now is the relationships that I've built with directors, producers, choreographers, musicians, like anybody that I, whose work I've gotten to experience and really enjoyed and respect. And so, yeah, that sort of like,
yeah,
I don't know. I don't know. Although all those early stages where you kind of feel it's kind of like the crash course of learning how this business works, like that time is really invaluable in terms of like, pay attention to who you're in the room with, do great work, be proud of the work that you're doing and protect it. And know that every connection that you make is going to pay off at some point when you reach the point where you're like, okay, I'm ready to start sort of investing differently in my own art.
Yeah, for sure. The first time we talked to all of our guests, we asked them about their Ring of Keys moment, the moment that inspired them to get involved and interested in the arts. Because we've had you on the show before, as we welcome you back in, is there a moment over the last year that's reignited your love and passion for the arts, whether it be film, TV, music, et cetera, anything like that?
Yeah. I can speak from seeing Gypsy, which I got to see the first preview and opening night because my man is playing Telsa, just absolutely guys, I'm so like, I mean, I'd be blown away even if he wasn't like the love of my life, but just that the experience of seeing, like, I'm so inspired by him, and you know, to give him a shout out on here, just like his commitment to excellence and artistry is just like, is so inspiring to me on like such a day-to-day level. Like, you know, he was at rehearsal early and late every day throughout all of that. He still go, like, he'll go and like find mentors to be like, yeah, I'm working on, you know, and when I ask him about how his show went, he'll just be like, you know, I don't know if I was like really living the story tonight, but I'm like, damn, baby, like, great. You stay, like, he's so committed to not just like, not just being such a technically, you know, fantastic and capable dancer, but also just like his commitment to just this kind of spiritual offering of what it is really amazing and really inspiring to me. And so just to get to see your person like really firmly being like, this is exactly where you should be right now, doing exactly, like, and I'm so happy the world gets to see him do this. And also just seeing Audra, like, Audra's my number one hero, like before Beyonce, before anyone else, you know, it's always been Audra.
Yes.
And watching her, I just remember thinking like, when it was that time when Rose's turn is coming and like, here we go. And I remember just thinking like, oh my God, like your name is before the title, like the amount of pressure that's on you is so immense. And you know, this thing, this legacy of this role and how much is being like put on you is so crazy. And here we are, what it really comes down to is like, you're just a girl with a moment, you know? And here we are like, everyone leaning in a little bit, like, how's it gonna be? And it's like, of course, it's Audra. It's gonna be fucking excellent. It's everything. Like, and I heard that commitment to like, just like artistry and mastery and just like, you know, getting to see, you know, one of the greats. I'm like, thank God we're alive at the same time as Audra McDonald. And we've gotten to see her do so many amazing things. But I just felt a certain, and maybe this is too much, I felt a kinship with her. You know, I'm just like, every night at 7 o'clock, you know, we're all like all the leading ladies of Broadway in general, anyone who's, or anyone on Broadway in general, but especially for the women holding it down in their companies, of like, there's just a special pressure on us. And I can understand an iota of that feeling of like everyone being like, well, what's she gonna do with it? And everyone taking out their phones and fucking whatever. Like, I understand what that is. And watching her, I had such a like reinvigoration of why I love this so much that I like really needed when I saw her. So that was Kevin and Audra. And just like, he's in a show with her. Like, it's the dreamiest thing, so. That's my
He's such a highlight
I love
of
it.
The show too.
He's really good
so
one.
Amazing.
Yeah, I also watched Kevin and I was like, this is my man. we love Kevin
okay,
Solak in this house.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah, I think my moment was like a week ago. My high school came to see the show. There were like, it was 75 kids from my high school came to see Moulin Rouge. And they, it was crazy. They made such a big deal out of it, which was like nuts to me. It was so sweet. But one of my best friends from high school, shout out to Tara, at the time in high school, she was Tara Bordis. Now she's Tara Winslow, but she is the director of my high school, my old high school's drama club now. And so she arranged for all these kids to come and see this show. And there was just something so like full circle. I don't know. My like inner critic is insatiable. It's just like so loud and so I'm somebody who like if I don't feel like I'm really tapping into something outside of myself every night, I will like I'm really tough on myself. And
after the fact that you'll be tough on yourself, or is it in the
moment? My gosh, no, it's a little bit of everything. It's all over, you know, and that is just this ongoing process of sort of like working through that. And there are, you know, there are times where I'm really successful, and then there are times where I'm unsuccessful. And you know, you hope that as you go on, like the times where it's unsuccessful is a little bit further and farther between. But there was something about like going out to meet them afterwards and speaking with them, you know, regardless of whatever I had done on that stage, like speaking with them and remembering what it felt like to be them, to literally have been in those seats. You know, I took a trip when I was in high school to go see, it was the revival of Guys and Dolls on Broadway, which is so like, you know, silly and fun and whatnot. But like I was there, I was that. I watched that happen and I dreamed of doing what I'm doing right now. And I don't know, it was just kind of like really humbling where I was just like, hey, at the end of the day, you're just this a girl with the moment, you know what I mean? Like, you know, and I really it sort of like woke something up in me in terms of like I really don't want to miss this moment, sort of hiding under the covers and, you know, beating myself down for not being, you know, flawless every night. But you know, we're just
Period, John. Yeah.
yeah, you know, we do the best we can. And it's sort of like Soleil was saying, we're living in this world of social media now where so much of what we do becomes public so quickly. And like once upon a time, you know, the theater was kind of like a really safe space for artists to just like be with the audience and everything is alive in that moment and then it's past. But now sometimes, you know, these performances, however you felt about it one way or the other, like they will live on and you kind of have to be okay with releasing that. And you move on and you get another shot the next night and the next night, the next afternoon and then the next night. And but that can be really tough to navigate. And but something about meeting with those kids last week was really just kind of like set my perspective back in order. And it's like, okay, you worked very hard to be here. You need to set the example that is these kids can accomplish everything that they want to accomplish the same way that you know, chase this thing down and you're here now. So be like kind to yourself. I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah. Because I just, you know, we love it so much. We do this because we love it so much. Like we're not there, we're nobody goes into theater being like, this is gonna make me rich and famous. Like that's just not what this business is. You do it because you love it so much. And sometimes you can really rob yourself of the joy, you know, by just beating yourself down for not being better. And you know, no artist is ever satisfied. There's always more work to be done. But there is a certain line that you don't want to cross with yourself in terms of just giving yourself grace to be on the journey.
Absolutely. Well, y'all are so amazing in Moulin Rouge. I just have to tell you, we end with a dose of drama, and my dose of drama is going to be this. Okay, Saleha, firework. John, Roxanne. I mean, I wanted to stand and give a standing ovation for both of you after each of those, but the vocals y'all are giving, it's pretty beyond. It's pretty beyond. And I'm not just hyping you up. Like, I brought my friend who's never seen Moulin Rouge before or anything, and he left like obsessed with the two of y'all and just like could not believe the gaggy vocals occurring on that stage. So, as an audience member, left fully satisfied. So, thank you so much
Thank
for
you.
everything you're giving us. Seriously, like, y'all only have a little bit of time to catch these two together in Moulin Rouge. So, run to the Al Hirschfeld. Seriously. Dylan, do you have a dose of drama?
Okay, my dose of drama is I'm finally on the Severance train. I don't know if either of y'all watch it, but I just got to season two, and no spoilers, no spoilers, no spoilers. It's all I want to do and consume all weekend long, and I highly recommend it.
Wow, you're about to go on such a ride.
I mean, the reveals towards the end of season one, the season one finale. I mean, like almost every guest this spring has mentioned Severance as their dose of drama, or at least that they're watching it. And I finally understand now.
That
So
was
really is
good.
very, very
You're
good.
ready to be very confused
Yeah, well,
throughout
that too. And
season.
like, I kind of
But you
like
have
that
to
kind of
stick with it
stuff.
because I fell off at one point during season two because there's definitely there we stray from the path, but
Don't
they'll get
watch it
back
at
to it. Be
night. Me and
patient.
Kevin have been trying to watch the finale for 3 days, and every night
I will, yeah. I will say I
we're
fell asleep during, like, and I'll only fall asleep for like 10 minutes and I'll wake up and I'll be like, wait,
And then
wait.
you're
And
like,
you can't
what the
tell how
hell
much
is
time
going
has passed
on?
because they're always in the white office
Exactly.
setting.
It's like
Anyways,
hypnotic. Oh
it
my
is. But
God.
that's the point. Okay, Slay or John, do either of you have a dose of drama to take us home with? Could be a recommendation, could be something on your mind,
Yes.
anything.
Well, okay. My dose of drama in my own life. I am doing a show at the Carlisle. I'm doing three shows at the Carlisle. April 24th, 25th, 26th. It's
Oh
called
my
At
God.
Least for Tonight, and I'm doing an exploration on what does it mean when the universe keeps putting you in shows when you die, where you die. I have died hundreds of times. Hundreds. Like, I have not survived in years. And I'm like, what's that about, you know? And so we're gonna have a fun time, thinking about mortality and how the world feels so scary, but how martinis really help, mainly. That is the thesis statement of my show at the Carlisle.
And a martini at the Carlisle. Please. That is elegance.
Okay.
I mean, my God.
So I hope to see everyone there. The tickets are selling. It's actually selling very, very well. So ooh, get them while you can.
I'm not surprised to hear that at all.
What kind of music can we expect from this?
Oh my gosh. A little bit. I've got jazz standards. I've recently become really obsessed with everything Eartha Kitt has ever done live. So we've got a little Eartha Kitt. We've got a little Sarah Vaughan because I love her and it's the Carlisle. We've also got Evita. We've got Almost Famous. We've got a little something from a lot of the shows that I've done and then some pop songs too. All I know is there's a little something for everyone. So.
Are we talking Morocco?
Morocco, she's had her time in the sun.
Okay.
We're actually thinking, don't laugh at me, John. She has. Morocco, she's the only song anyone has ever heard from that show when I talk to them. So I'm doing a song. It's actually this song called Real World. It was the big 11 o'clock number. John, maybe today's the day that you can listen. John told me he's never listened to Almost Famous. I'm calling you out on the
There's
podcast.
A great song called No Friends, I think, as well.
No Friends is really good. I'm not on that one.
Right.
But
that's
no,
like,
I'm kidding. That's Casey like singing for his life. No, but I think John, you need to be acquainted with my discography. That should be your dose of
And I can't wait. And listen, I do not need to be convinced to be acquainted with Celia Pfeiffer's discography. Okay. I am ready and I'm ready to listen. Sure. I would have come to see the show, but I was out of town.
It's okay. If you haven't listened to Real World by the show tonight, just don't expect me to look you in the eye.
I'm listening to it right now.
You guys need to update us. You need to update us when this happens.
That's my dose of drama. I've been listening to Real World this whole time.
It's on a loop. Yeah, he's lying. He's obsessed. He can't stop listening to it.
Spotify top 5 next year.
Yeah, my top artist is Celia Pfeiffer. Yeah.
Okay, you say that like it's a joke.
Always has
okay,
been.
Thank you, Jesus.
That's like a real friend for him to be like, telling the truth about whether or not he's listening to this album now. You know what I mean?
Listen, we are nothing if not real with each other. And it's a blessing.
This is
what we do. But I will listen to it today. But also, I mean, here's the thing is that I'm also a big Tom Kitt stan.
We love Tom Kitt.
Worked with him on Jagged Little Pill, Next to Normal's one of my favorites. Like Tom Kitt is a gem in this business. So I will gladly give both of you a listen.
Thank you.
John, do you have a dose of drama otherwise before we say goodbye?
Oh my goodness. I don't know. I guess if we're so I just watched the new episode of White Lotus yesterday.
Oh.
Which I love the White Lotus. All of the seasons.
You're in
this
good company.
This one has been like, you know, kind of a crazy season for many reasons. But I guess I'm just like, and I like so many people have been so dramatic about what it is and what's happening. And I'm like, we've all been paying attention the last two seasons, right? Like it's always been crazy and always kind of been pushing the envelope of like what is suitable for TV. And I'm just like, I don't know. It makes me think about every other piece of art, piece of pop culture that has become popular that people are like, what's this? What's that? And I'm like, when did we decide that like the characters that we want to see on TV are all supposed to be like perfect people and like listening? I'm like, this world is messy and there are so many people in it. And like, you don't have to like buy into this, any certain type of fad or any certain type of trend that is happening in pop culture. Like you have access to it, but you don't need to do that. But I'm like, let Mike White cook. I'm like, I want to see where he's going with this. I know that there are messages in here to be sort of like mined and whatnot. And so I'm just like, oh, White Lotus has me in a chokehold right now. I'm like, what are you getting at? What are you doing? What am I like? I love putting these puzzles together that he creates. So I'm like,
Yeah,
I'm here for messy art that shows the world as it is and all of its imperfect people. Okay. You know what I mean? I want to see.
Period.
Take the brothers.
I don't know. I don't necessarily want to experience it in my life, but I want to. But you know, I'm like, yeah, these are fascinating characters to watch.
Mm-hmm.
If everybody handled everything perfectly on the show, then it would be really uninteresting. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
I'm like, let's see it. Let's maybe not follow the example, but let's learn together about what this is. What is this man trying to tell us? This man being Mike White.
Right.
Anyway, I don't know. I'm on the White Lotus train.
Same. We love
see
it.
it.
I'm in for life. I'm in for life.
It's oh, so and fun. Also my last dose of drama. Come see us before April 13th because I'm leaving Beloved.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Come.
You got 2 weeks.
John is incredible in this show. It's going to be so weird. It's going to be very strange not to do this with you every day. But so everyone should manifest John and I's next project.
Yes.
I know.
Yes.
Someone be brave. Put us on stage together again or put us on a screen anywhere. Just
be
just
brave.
Put us in another room together.
That wouldn't even be brave. That would be smart. Financially.
Be smart. Be brave.
Make the right decision for once. Put us together again.
Bring us back together. Oh, we've had so much fun. We promise you immaculate vibes.
Okay.
You guys have given us immaculate vibes today. We are so grateful for your time, the extra time you gave us too. Everyone's already following you both online, but where would you like people to follow you if they were to choose?
That would be @_solele. That's me.
We're still working on getting the one name
Instagram
handle though.
I right? know. It's it still belongs to the Laser Dental Company.
Got
but
it.
What?
Yeah. Or go to like @Soleya. It's weird images of teeth. Just so I messaged them. They haven't gotten back to me and it is what it is. But if you want to help me with that, John.
All right. Let's dig into this.
Later in April. Okay.
Yeah. We're gonna figure this out for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm only on Instagram, so you can find me @JohnFCardoza, all one word.
Amazing. Aww. While everyone is following these two, they better be following us. We're at the Drama Podcast. Connor's at Connor McDowell. I am at Dylan McDowell. Thank you both so much. This was such a blast.
Thank you. Thanks.
Yes, we really appreciate it. It's been so fun.
And Connor, I will see you next time.
Drama.